Wonderettes is a cotton candy-colored nonstop musical blast from the past. The New York Times hails it an utter charm, an effervescent and irresistible musical. Backstage calls it a laugh-a-minute songfest. You'll want to see it twice. And Theater Mania says it's infectiously charming. Audiences leave beaming and humming. So don't miss the feel-good musical comedy hit of the season. Mr. Sandman, The Marvelous Wonderettes at the Westside Theater. Visit telecharge.com today.
Now playing at the Westchester Broadway Theater in Elmsford is their first hit show of 2009, Meshuggah Nuns, the Ecumenical Nonsense. Those lovable little sisters of Hoboken have been given an all-expense-paid trip on the Faiths of All Nations cruise. When the cruise cast for Fiddler on the Roof becomes seasick, our very funny nuns take over the show with Tevye, and we have an hysterical Meshuggah Nuns. This is a musical for anyone who loves a good laugh. Your evening begins with a delicious served dinner, including salad, dessert, and coffee. It's Broadway entertainment with the best dinner and show package anywhere, including free parking. And all this for only $73. Order tickets online at BroadwayTheater.com or call 914-592-2222. That's 914-592-2222 for Meshuggah Nuns, now playing at the Westchester Broadway Theater in Elmsford.
Don't miss the 5th Annual Legislative Breakfast of the United Jewish Organizations of Williamsburg on Sunday, March 29th at 9:15 a.m. at the Continental. The breakfast will be honoring Williamsburg NYCH Tenants Association with special greetings by State Senator Daniel Squadron. The breakfast is chaired by Willie Ramfogel of the Met Council. Also paying special tribute to Comptroller Tom DiNapoli, the Honorable Dennis P. Whalen of the Governor's Office, Chancellor Joe Klein of the New York City Department of Education, Deputy Mayor Ed Schuyler, Vincent Abadi, and Gerald Esposito. To make your reservations, contact the Freelander Group at 718-436-5555. That's 718-436-5555. The breakfast is sponsored in part by Therapy, Care, and Health Plus and is coordinated by the Freelander Group. Again, for more information, to come and participate, call 718-436-5555.
Wow, such a beautiful house. Such a wonderful block. I'm not jealous, but how'd you manage to find this one? I've been searching for such a deal for months.
From thejewishpress.com, they have the largest online Jewish classifieds with updated listings every day and even some with photos. So you can find the latest opportunities before anyone else. Check out the all-new jewishpress.com. jewishpress.com has the largest online Jewish classifieds. Search thejewishpress.com for the latest job openings. Updated daily. No other site can match jewishpress.com's daily job postings and real estate listings. Click now and find it before someone else grabs it. Browse jewishpress.com's online dining guide. Search archives of your favorite columnists and enter contests to win free airline tickets and dinner at top restaurants, all at jewishpress.com.
There it is, a photo of my next home at jewishpress.com.
Dear Edwina, the musical comedy from the creators of Junie B. Jones, the musical, is a hit. Join Edwina and her pals as they put on their hilarious advice-giving show the New York Times is calling a tour de force, gleaming with originality. Dear Edwina is now playing at DR2 Theater, 103 East 15th Street in the heart of Union Square. Log on to DearEdwina.com or call Telecharge.com at 212-239-6200. That's DearEdwina.com or call Telecharge.com at 212-239-6200. Call for your tickets to Dear Edwina now. It's the hit show you don't want to miss.
And hi, it's John Loftus. Welcome back to the Loftus Report this Tuesday night. And my co-host on every Tuesday is Greg Allen, host of The Right Balance. You can find his background bio and stuff on therightbalance.org, great little site. And so I'm the House Democrat, and Greg is the House Republican. But as this program indicates, The Right Balance is a balanced program. The truth does not belong to the left or the right. It belongs to the people, and we fight to get the truth out. Tonight we have two very interesting guests. The second guest is Ivan Cement, a man who travels around the world and has very interesting contacts and is a very interesting writer. He has essays up on the blog that are quite well read. But our first guest in this half hour is an old friend of mine, not old in the chronological sense. Ryan, I think we first met, 4 years ago? And he had the claim to fame as the youngest intelligence analyst in the U.S. Brilliant guy, and or at least his mom tells me that. But Ryan is absolutely one of the most detailed, profound researchers in the U.S. on several topics involving the Middle East. We gave him, you know, some key slots at the Intelligence Summit to give lectures, and his segment was packed. This is a guy that really does his homework, and it's a pleasure to have him on the Loftus Report. Ryan, how you doing tonight?
Thanks for having me, and thanks for that wonderful introduction.
Well, what can I say?
Listen, and allow me to say, Ryan, you've been doing some really nice work, and a lot of your stuff gets reprinted in a lot of places, and your recent work on tracking bin Laden, for example, was really strong.
Oh, thank you very much, Greg.
Now, what's your... let's do the capitalist plug stuff, as Greg would say.
The blatant capitalist plug.
Sure, well, my personal website is worldthreats.com, but what I'm really here to talk about is this new documentary called Homegrown Jihad, Terrorist Camps Around the U.S., put out by the Christian Action Network. That's christianaction.org, and it documents how there are approximately 35 radical Islamic compounds that exist right here in the United States.
You know, it's funny. This show has creating ripples. I'm getting email stuff from people saying, did you know that there were, you know, there's a whole town in America that's run by the Islamists, and only Muslims can live there. But you guys have been doing this stuff for a while. Now, what's the name of the show again?
Sure, the documentary is called Homegrown Jihad, and it's available at christianaction.org, and it basically revolves around this group called Jamaat al-Fukra, based out of Pakistan, that operates under the name Muslims of America here in the United States, and that's the name under which they run these 35 compounds. And the documentary, one of the key features of it, is that we've actually gotten our hands on a secret terrorist training videotape by this organization's leader, where he says, if you want any of my training in Islamic military warfare, contact some of my compounds there in the United States.
Unbelievable. So there's no doubt that this... you know, the compounds in the U.S. are tied to a Pakistani terrorist leader. Now, tell us about the Pakistani terrorist leader. What's his track record, Ryan?
Sure. His name is Sheikh Mubarak Ali Jilani, and his organization, Jamaat al-Fukra, has been behind many, many terrorist attacks and various criminal activities. But Sheikh Jilani really came to be famous because of Daniel Pearl. Daniel Pearl was the Jewish Wall Street Journal reporter who went to Pakistan to interview Sheikh Jilani about his alleged links to Richard Reed, the shoe bomber. And on his way to interviewing Jilani, he was kidnapped, and he was killed and beheaded. Now, if you go to Sheikh Jilani's website, he claims that he had nothing to do with the beheading, and indeed the federal government has not made that formal accusation. But he does say that Daniel Pearl was part of an assassination team sent to kill him, and that Daniel Pearl is just part of a conspiracy. He's really still alive, and this is all just a giant smear to target Sheikh Jilani.
Oh,
so
wow.
He really has a motive.
Well, how bizarre that Daniel Pearl is still alive, despite the fact that we saw him beheaded.
Right, and he says it's common knowledge that Daniel Pearl is still alive and that the FBI did. You see, he sees the Jews as controlling everyone, and the Jews are controlling all the forces of evil. I mean, if you get a bad hamburger, he'll blame it on the Jews. And he basically feels that Jews are evil. He actually says Jews are examples of human Satans. He blames 9/11 on them. And he's really in love with himself. He views all the evil of the world directed at him to take him down.
Weird. It reminds me of Gaddafi claiming this week that the Jews were responsible for the crisis in Darfur. Say what?
And that's actually been a common claim. I've heard that from numerous Arab media publications over the past, I'd say, 6 months.
Well, I think anti-Semitism, almost always, if you scratch the surface of any kind of anti-Semite, whether it's the quiet British type of anti-Semite or the fellow we're talking about right now, you find people that have a very, very serious character flaw. I always found it amazing that Jews were supposedly the capitalists who were ruining the world and controlling the world, and also the communists who were doing the same thing. Fascinating how, what, 0.2% of the world can control so much? Even if it were the case, what would it say about the 99%?
It would also mean that Jews are incompetent to not be able to take this guy out when he has his mailing address listed on his website.
What does the FBI do about all this, though? What is Homeland Security and the FBI doing about all this? Are they monitoring these people? Are they pretending they're not there?
Well, here's the problem. There might be some monitoring, but here's the problem. The different comrades have outreach programs, so it's not uncommon to see pictures of them having picnics with FBI officials. Now, Jamaat al-Fukr, the Pakistani group that runs these groups here in the United States, they are not listed as a foreign terrorist organization by the State Department. Throughout the entire 1990s up to the year 2000, in the State Department's annual Patterns of Global Terrorism reports, they listed Jamaat al-Fukr as a group to be basically scared of that could launch a massive attack on our soil, but they viewed it as a domestic group, so they kind of passed the buck, and as a result of them not being designated as a foreign terrorist organization, the police have to handle each case of crime, each case of terrorist activity as an individual act. They can't just attack the organization as a whole, and these compounds are huge. The one I visited was over 70 acres large. So who knows what's going on in there, and the FBI does not have a consistent presence on this land.
What's going on with the FBI?
Well, who knows? I mean, it's hard to know exactly what's going on, but like I said, these compounds, they have picnic with FBI officials. You know, they have outreach programs, just like the Muslim Brotherhood does. But the response I've been getting from various people in the Joint Terrorism Task Force, FBI even, and especially local law enforcement, is they are very concerned about this organization, but their hands are tied because they're not listed as a foreign terrorist group.
But wait a minute. Now, the Treasury Department designates STDs as specifically designated terrorist organizations. So it's not the FBI doing this. Is there any reason why people higher up would be protecting a group like this? This is kind of sound like conspiracy stuff.
Right, I know. It could just be political correctness. We actually talked to Susan Fenger, who led the Colorado investigation into this group. Back in 1993, there was a full-fledged terrorist camp, just like you find in Afghanistan or Iraq, that was shut down in Colorado with plans for terrorist attacks and bombs, and it was owned by this organization. Now, when the state police wanted to go after them, they called in the FBI, but then, strangely, the FBI got orders back from Washington, D.C. to pull out. They couldn't get the FBI involved on this. It's been largely a state effort.
How bizarre. Reminds me of the case up in Seattle. Remember they were trying to buy land to build a terrorist training group up there? And had talked with some local law enforcement people, and they said the Justice Department received orders not to prosecute certain individuals involved with that operation. And the guy involved, by the way, later turned up working for the British Intelligence Service and bouncing around the Middle East and South Africa. So,
Ryan, let me ask a very naive question. John, I think you'd appreciate this as well. Any chance of Homegrown Jihad, your new documentary, being shown on PBS? Thank you.
CBS went after our documentary pretty hard, and they had a fantastic quote in there. First, they said that their report was based on how they obtained a copy of the trailer when it was freely available on YouTube. They didn't even watch it or call us. Then, furthermore, they quote these government officials saying that we're just trying to inflame passions, but then they quote this anonymous government official as saying, these guys are just wannabe terrorists. They're not real terrorists. And I got a great comment when I wrote an article for Pajamas Media about this. And someone said Muhammad Atta was a wannabe terrorist on September 10th, 2001.
Good response.
And, you know, John, I'm looking at something right now from the Washington Post. Pentagon to drop global war on terror, and they're going to change it to overseas contingency operation.
Oh, more PC stuff, you know.
It's a four-letter word, John, allowing for poetic license.
Now, let's be nice. I think that what's going on is that there is a growing sense that there is a network of homegrown terrorist networks in the United States. And this is hard for some agencies like the FBI to accept. Now, some of us have been saying this for the last 8 or 9 years. Remember, about 5 years ago, the British government brought me over to address an international conference on financing anti-terrorism. And the guy next to me is, you know, the intelligence chief of the British Metropolitan Police in London. And he says, there is absolutely no link between Al-Qaeda, these foreign insurgents, and the recent terrorism on July 7th. And I looked at him and said, say what? Now, of course, that position has been totally recanted by the British government. Indeed, there were dozens of links to Al-Qaeda. But that mindset, you know, this is just local terrorism, these are wannabes, no big deal, is always the first line of defense. And it's so relevant of what's going on in America now. But the problem is a lot of these guys are really big players. They're not nice folks. So I think, Ryan, that you guys have made a very unpopular movie. What are you going to do to get it out to the public? What can we do to help?
Well, basically, we're trying to run screenings everywhere possible. We're putting this in the hands of citizens. We need people to go to ChristianAction.org and order the film Homegrown Jihad and basically show it to everyone you possibly can. Contact us so we can coordinate rallies maybe, but definitely screenings. And there actually has been some very positive response from FBI officials. There's always a few who doubt it, but overall, I would say the response has been very positive. The ones that don't like it are the ones that subscribe to this view where all terrorists operate like Al-Qaeda, which is the most disturbing thing I've learned in recent months, is that Al-Qaeda will get the materials for a bomb and they'll detonate it tomorrow. Whereas most terrorist organizations, the real sophisticated ones like Jamaat al-Fukra, they plan over the long term, and if they're being successful, they're not going to jeopardize their successes by being reckless and attacking too soon. Part of the reason that Jamaat al-Fukra hasn't conducted a giant 9/11, even though they're surely capable of it, is because they're so successful at financing and recruiting and building these compounds throughout the country. Why would they jeopardize that when they're doing so well?
So if we have 35 compounds across America, if these guys are indeed coordinated, it seems logical, I believe you, what, and they could theoretically pull off an attack that makes 9/11 look like candy cane.
Absolutely, and I've been getting consistent reports from people living near these compounds of gunfire. When I went to the one compound, I heard gunfire personally, and there was actually an ATF agent that kind of explained how these compounds work in the year 2001. It seems that what's happening is they get basic training and indoctrination at these camps, and then the really good, skilled ones go over to Pakistan for further training. And that's where a lot of the money that these residents donate their money to goes to. It all goes over to Pakistan.
Ryan,
oh, wow.
Did you hear anything about a couple years back when some of these camps, there was one in Alabama, and they were using school buses for target practice? Was that an urban legend, a myth, or was it real?
That's actually referring to the camp that I visited, Islamberg, up in Hancock, New York, and that one is buried in the Catskills Mountains. It's hard to know because we didn't get to view the bus, the Muslims of America compound there, Islamberg. They claimed that the damage to the bus was just because of some kids breaking the windows. Doug Hagman, who's a private investigator, he claims that it was bullet holes. I'm not a scientist or a forensic analyst, so I can't tell you which way it is, but the pictures definitely clearly show damage being done to a school bus.
Now, is this, there's a lot of stuff in the net about Islamberg. Is it an official town? Is it just a nickname? What's the legal status of this group?
Well, you walk up to the camp and you see a giant sign that says, Welcome to Islamberg. It's basically an independent town within a town, I would say. It's private property. It's owned by Muslims of America. You can't walk on it, otherwise you're trespassing. It's over 70 acres large, and it's really kind of isolated from the rest of the world, and it's almost like one of these states within a state that you've heard about in Europe, and like France, for example. It's rather strange that can go on our own territory.
You know, it just hit me with this PC and everything. Are we now going to have to talk about Osama bin Laden and refer to him as a community reorganizer? I mean, we're getting into PC right now. How do you feel about Barack Obama and Napolitano protecting this country? I'm very uncomfortable with this man.
Well, considering how bad our elected officials have been on the borders, if you look at her history, it may not be to the level that you and I would like, Greg, but she has taken some measures in regards to the border. In fact, I believe she did so today in regards to what's going on in Mexico. Now, that did disturb me that she didn't use the word terrorist at all during her first official remarks in front of Congress, but I don't think that means that that's far from her mind. I'm sure she's well aware that if there's a terrorist attack on her soil, she gets blamed.
John, with your background, what would you tell the president right now as it relates to what Ryan Morrow is discussing?
The FBI is adrift. It does not have a consensus within that agency. You've got the senior officials are still playing games with the Muslim Brotherhood and trying to recruit informants within terrorist groups instead of trying to shut them down. The rank and file of the FBI, wonderful people, love them to death. They're trying to fight terrorism in America, and their single biggest obstacle has been the FBI leadership on Pennsylvania Avenue in Fort Hoover. There's something seriously wrong with these old-style Washington bureaucrats in the FBI that are hampering investigations. This is not a news story. It's been something going on for a long time. There is a culture of insensitivity, of denial inside the Washington field office, inside the headquarters of the FBI, that has to change if we're ever going to make any progress on fighting domestic terrorism, let alone international terrorism.
Ryan, if you were a Las Vegas odds maker and we were looking at, say, the next 18 months, would you think these people would do anything violent, or would they continue to grow and take advantage of our freedom of the press, for example, and freedom of religion to, shall we say, rather than blow us up, allow us to implode, allow us to melt like an ice statue?
Based on the fact that there's been over 50 incidents of terrorist activity, violence, and just general criminal activity by members of Jamaat al-Fukra here in the United States, I have to say it's safe to assume that they're engaged in criminal activity right now, that individual members have the intent, at least, to engage in violent terrorist activity. But I do believe Sheikh Jilani is one smart guy, and he knows that he needs to tell his compounds to lie low for the time being while they can expand and act on their ideology at a later date. That doesn't reduce the threat. In fact, it makes it worse. It shows that they're more sophisticated than Al-Qaeda, and this idea that we can compare every terrorist organization to Al-Qaeda and prepare accordingly is blatantly false, and it will result in future attacks down the line.
So they take our Constitution, mix it with a dash of PC, and take advantage of the way we live.
That's exactly right, and that's the frustration of the law enforcement and FBI officials that we've been talking to at the Christian Action Network, where they are just frustrated, but they say, what can we do? If they find out an individual member of these compounds is engaged in illegal activity and they have the proof, yes, they'll go and arrest them. But like I said, they're huge. They do not have the power to just go in and start searching around.
Amazing. By the way, if there's any FBI or government agencies out there, if you would like to be a whistleblower and do it in a legal way, it will cost you a dollar. For the grand sum of $1, you can hire me as your attorney under the Florida attorney-client privilege. I can never be compelled to reveal your name, and I will work within the system legally to try and get the information properly declassified. There's a lot of frustration out there within various domestic U.S. agencies, and let us know what we can do to help. Ryan, what do you think is the next step needed? Should we go in and raid these places without search warrants? It is, after all, private property.
Mm-hmm. It's hard. I think that there's really two options. The first is to label Jamaat al-Fukra as a foreign terrorist organization under the State Department. Therefore, they have the authority to just go in and then prosecute, maybe not each member as a whole, just for being part of the organization, but definitely going in and having the power to search all these compounds. The other ideas that we're floating around at the Christian Action Network is we have some model legislation at christianaction.org, and it can be tweaked if people have concerns. It's just kind of a general idea. But one of the things that we're looking at is having some state laws passed that say if a certain number of individuals have been convicted or arrested of terrorist activity or certain levels of criminal activity, the authority should have the power to go in and search the entire private property owned under the organization that runs that land. So, for example, let's say three members of Islamberg get busted for being involved in high-level organized crime or terrorist activity. the authorities would then be able to go into the entire compound because the entire compound is run by Sheikh Jilani. So the authorities would not have the power to say, go into your house because your neighbor was arrested, because that's separate pieces of private property.
Ryan, I worked at the headquarters of the Justice Department for several years and handled cases at the Federal Circuit Courts and the Supreme Court. That won't work under the U.S. Constitution. You can't just get three guys and say, that's it, let's go search each individual home.
Even if the land is all owned by the same radical Pakistani cleric, though,
right, I mean,
owned by the same person, then I think all of their residences owned by that person should be able to be searched.
True, then any landlord that owned, you know, an apartment building waived the civil rights. That's not how the law, it's not the ownership of the property that is the determinant factor. It is the reasonable expectation of privacy. Now, it's a tough issue. Thanks for raising it. But, guys, this is a tough issue. There are terrorist compounds in the U.S. I'm not saying the FBI is asleep at the switch, but the FBI is undecided. Thanks to Ryan Morrow for bringing this to our attention. And you got to read his article on frontpagemagazine.com about Iran. Pretty good stuff. We'll have to bring Ryan back and talk about that on another occasion. This is John Loftus and Greg Allen. You listen to the Loftus Report. We'll be right back after these words from our sponsors.
Now playing at the Westchester Broadway Theater in Elmsford is their first hit show of 2009, Meshuggah Nuns, the ecumenical nonsense. Those lovable little sisters of Hoboken have been given an all-expense-paid trip on the Faiths of All Nations cruise. When the cruise cast for Fiddler on the Roof becomes seasick, our very funny nuns take over the show with Tevye, and we have an hysterical Meshuggah Nuns. This is a musical for anyone who loves a good laugh. Your evening begins with a delicious served dinner, including salad, dessert, and coffee. It's Broadway entertainment with the best dinner and show package anywhere, including free parking. And all this for only $73. Order tickets online at BroadwayTheater.com or call 914-592-2222. That's 914-592-2222 for Meshuggah Nuns, now playing at the Westchester Broadway Theater in Elmsford.
York. Critics and audiences are cheering the most fun, the most irresistible new musical in town, The Marvelous Wonderettes. The fun never stops, raves the Associated Press. You won't find a more delightful girl group than the irrepressible Wonderettes. New York Magazine writes, iconic pop hits shine in this bubbly musical, featuring all your favorite songs from the 50s and beyond. The Marvelous Wonderettes is a cotton candy-colored nonstop musical blast from the past. The New York Times hails it an utter charm, an effervescent and irresistible musical. Backstage calls it a laugh-a-minute songfest. You'll want to see it twice. And Theater Mania says it's infectiously charming. Audiences leave beaming and humming. So don't miss the feel-good musical comedy hit of the season. The Marvelous Wonderettes at the Westside Theater. Visit telecharge.com today.
For the most enjoyable and affordable Pesach, why not go to Orlando with the Pesach Orlando Group? That's right. They're minutes away from two parks, Universal Studios, Kennedy Space Center, five parks at Disney World, two parks at SeaWorld, Gator World, and so much more. But they provide you with the best Sedarim, Shiurim, best Glad Kosher food, Chalav Yisrael, Shmur Matzah, Glad Kosher, Nanga Brooks, under the strict supervision of Rabbi Nissan El-Samer, Shlita Rav Kahal Beis Chaim Yitzchak of Muncie, New York. It's a great private place with total Yiddish atmosphere. And Jerry Markowitz will be performing and davening, and Rabbi Ari Korn will be leading lectures and other special programs. So with the best possible service and the lowest prices, contact, call Pesach in Orlando. What are you waiting for? Call 718-354-8383, 718-354-8383, or log on to PesachOrlando.com. That's PesachOrlando.com for the most affordable and enjoyable Pesach with the Pesach Orlando Group.
This
This is an important message brought to you by Genzyme Corporation. You may never have heard of type 1 Gaucher disease, but it is the most common genetic disease affecting individuals of Ashkenazi Jewish heritage, those of Eastern or Central European descent. Approximately 1 out of every 850 in the Ashkenazi Jewish population has type 1 Gaucher disease, and 1 out of 15 is a carrier. In comparison, this is more prevalent than Tay-Sachs. Although type 1 Gaucher disease is more common in Ashkenazi Jews, it can also affect those who are not Jewish. Signs and symptoms of type 1 Gaucher disease may include some or all the following: fatigue, bone pain, easy bruising and or bleeding, enlarged abdomen due to enlarged liver or spleen. Early diagnosis and management may improve outcomes for those living with type 1 Gaucher disease. It is important to get the facts now. For more information about type 1 Gaucher disease, talk with your doctor. You may also visit www.gauchercare.com. That's GAUCHERcare.com. Or call 1-877-GAUCHER-1. That's 1-877-GOSHAY-1.
And welcome back. The Loftus Report on 620 AM. Greg Allen, the co-host on Tuesday nights here. From GlobalThoughts.com, we welcome to the show Ivan Cement, C-I-M-E-N-T, by the way. Ivan, welcome. And John, it's all yours.
Ivan, thanks for joining us. You know, how would you describe yourself? It seems from your bio and background, you're this fellow that travels around the world. You meet with top world leaders, and you have some pretty interesting insights into what's going on behind the scenes. How did you get involved in sort of being a, you know, a global management official working for the private sector?
Well, I guess it's just an interest of mine. I mean, I can't tell you it's my day job. My day job is I'm involved with a company here in New York that's involved in other types of more conventional type of business.
But I go ahead and plug the company. We allow that on the Loftus Report.
But I've been lucky over the years to be able to travel and be in interesting places at interesting times and to make a lot of good friends.
You know, the Chinese say that in ancient times it was a curse to wish someone to live in interesting times. So do you feel cursed or blessed with all the crazy things going on?
Well, the Chinese have another saying. They say, for education, go 10,000 miles. So I've always kept that in mind.
Very good, very good. So let's start the world tour. Where do you want to start?
Well, first of all, John, thank you for inviting me on the show tonight, and hello to all of you out there in Talkline Radio Land. I thought that what I think is interesting out there is, you know, Obama was on tonight, and they, of course, everybody was asking a lot of economic questions. There was hardly anything about foreign policy, and the truth is that Obama's team has been quietly very active in the area of foreign policy in a number of areas around the world. Putting out diplomatic feelers all over the place. For instance, in Russia, just in the past week, three former secretaries of state, three former senators, and a former defense secretary and Kissinger were all there. Are they just talking about arms control, or are they talking about lots of things? And the answer is most probably the latter. I thought that there are five areas that I could pinpoint to you where things are going on in a more quiet sense, and maybe we can make some sense out of this. Russia, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Turkey, and Syria are five places that I think we could paint a brush and talk about.
Well, John and Ivan, allow me to interject here. John Loftus, you and I on your show and on my show, John, you were just about the first person to talk about a possible 180 on the part of Syria. So why don't we start with Syria, John? Wouldn't that make sense since you saw the iceberg up ahead?
Yeah, I think there's a 50-50 chance that Syria is going to change sides. It's going to shop Iran, switch to the West, and lots of financial incentives are on the table. What do you think? Is Syria trying to have it both ways, or are they sincere about maybe turning towards the West?
Well, here's what I know about what's going on in Syria. I mean, the Americans have sent over very high-level envoys to Syria in the past month, the most senior people they've sent in 4 years. Syria's Assad has visited Saudi Arabia and Jordan over the past week or so, which is quite Very surprising, because Syria is now in the process of a rapprochement with the rest of the Arab world, and there's quite a price tag for this. According to Stratfor, he's asking the Saudis for $2 billion a year for the next 5 years. As you also know, that the Arab world is lobbying Syria to get on board as a wedge against Iran. And of course, Syria is trying to drive the hardest bargain that it can. He wants everybody to sign off on Lebanon giving Syria control over there, which is a very tough nut to crack. And Turkey is also leaning on Syria to make a deal, and I don't think it's a surprise that Obama is making a trip over to Turkey in 2 weeks to meet with Erdogan over there. So Turkey is trying to see what they can broker in the deal. So that's one area where a good amount of stuff is going on.
Yeah, I hear that as soon as the Netanyahu government comes in, the first thing they're going to do is sign a peace agreement with Syria on the Golan Heights, and that will be the stunner that lets Iran know it's really isolated. That things are going to move very quickly. People expect Netanyahu to be the hawk war president, but in fact, it looks like he's going to be one of the guys to do the Syrian deal. That's just the gossip I hear in the backside.
It sounds a little bit like Nixon going to China when a Democrat.
Yeah.
From what I'm told, the people in the military are the most pro in terms of moving forward with Syria.
In the Israeli military, yeah.
In the Israeli military.
In the U.S. military, though, I mean, I was talking to some people at CENTCOM who were pretty senior in the intelligence field, and they were totally unaware that this whole rapprochement with Syria was going on behind the scenes, and quite frankly, haven't really gotten up to speed. It looks as if there's a real disconnect between the foreign policy establishment in the White House of Israel and the U.S. military chain of command.
I am not in a position to know.
Yeah, maybe I'm just making an educated guess. I'm not always right, but I'm usually right.
Okay.
But if Syria, let's look at the bright side. If Syria changes sides, what does that mean for peace in the Middle East?
Well, I've been to Syria, and the people over there didn't seem quite as hostile as I thought they might be. I think the people in Syria are most interested in working 16 hours a day for 3 months in order to buy a refrigerator. They're pretty low on the Maslow hierarchy of needs over there. So I think that the geopolitics is not quite as important on the day to day level of the average Syrian person. I think if Syria comes over, I think that would be a good thing. Whether or not it really is so, I just don't know. For them to pick up and move away from the Iranians, people speculate about it, but I really don't know. I think, the Syrians, I just don't know.
I think it's a 50-50 shot. That's my guess. There's been some things going on behind the scenes where the Syrians have provided intelligence information to the West, and Hezbollah, an Iranian proxy, retaliated by assassinating a Syrian intelligence official, and a sort of like low-level war took place for a while, and that things have backed off. But I think that Syria realizes that Iran is very vulnerable economically. If oil prices stay low, Iran's going bankrupt and looking for a new sugar daddy. My sense is the Assad family cares about nothing except making money.
I agree with you that Syria has got a lot of incentives to get out of this deal, and I think particularly if there's a deal to be had, I think that the crunch point is going to be on Lebanon, actually. I think the Syrians really want to know that they're going to have a clear line on Lebanon. And I think the big unanswered question is where the U.S. is willing to come out on it. Clearly, the Israelis are not going to stand in the way in terms of giving them Lebanon.
Well, the poor Lebanese have just been, pawns, have been treated as badly as the Kurds have in the last half century. I think the Syrian attitude was put Syrian generals down into Lebanon, and everybody gets a cut of the drug trade going through. Well, that sort of got backed off a little bit. But the reality is that the Syrian economy is so bad, they need the remittance money from Syrian laborers in Lebanon to keep the economy afloat. I mean, last year, Syria ran out of oil. It didn't produce enough domestic oil to feed its own needs, and it's going downhill rapidly. Something has to change pretty quick, and I doubt very much the Syrians really care very much about Lebanese sovereignty as long as the Saudi money comes in to replace the Iranian money.
Maybe so. I mean, I've been to Lebanon twice, and you can definitely tell that, you know, how the country has been repressed in terms of that if they were free, they would just be a hell of a lot better over there. But, you know, all you need to know is when you're in the airport and you're in the departure lounge and you see this big picture of Hafez al-Assad staring down at you from the top of the airport in Beirut, you know basically that you may be in Beirut, but you're really still in Syria.
Wow. So much for the purported withdrawal of the Syrian forces from Lebanon. What's your take on the Hariri assassination investigation? Is that just a farce?
Well, I know that you have some interesting detail about that was news to me because I wasn't aware of it. I think that it's a pretty good bet that we're not going to hear very much about the Hariri thing. The Syrians clearly don't want to talk about it, and I have to assume that if conversations are going to go anywhere, I'm assuming that the Hariri matter is not going to be a very big discussion point.
And I want to
excuse me.
Go ahead.
I was going to say you mentioned earlier also Pakistan and Iran, and I just wonder, John and Ivan, from the both of you, which country is more dangerous at this point in history, Pakistan or Iran, to Europe, to Israel, to the United States, to moderate Arab nations?
Who goes first, me or John?
You. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, you know, that's a really arguable point, I can't really tell you who I think is the more dangerous country, but I'll set out the pro and con about this. And I'll tell you this much. People I know are very concerned about Iran. I'm sure that that's a great point of discussion. When I travel around at least in the Arab region, and those people are certainly afraid of Iran, but when I visit and inquire, people tell me that I should be worrying more about Pakistan. And the reasons are it's a failing state with leakage. They have the bomb. They aren't afraid to sell nuclear technology to the highest bidder, and we know that they have. And
yep.
Right now the country's in a real mess with fundamentalists who have infiltrated the intelligence services and militaries, who cause these entities to play a double game with the U.S. and act as an unreliable ally, even if you could call it an ally. Now, I see analysts such as Gerald Steinberg, David Makovsky, giving lectures with big maps of the region with Iran on it, and they don't say a word about Pakistan unless you ask them. And I think that Pakistan ought to scare people, too. I mean, the people that I talk to, they feel that Iran is more stable, has responsible people actually in charge. I mean, remember that, you know, Ahmadinejad, the president, he doesn't really have the power in that country, sort of just like Shimon Peres is the president of Israel and doesn't really control that country either. And Iran is in control of its military. Now, we or they can decide if they want Armageddon or if they're bluffing, but at least we know who's in charge in Iran. Pakistan may not be suicidal, but we no longer are sure that there really is total control over what they have. And so you could sort of decide what you think is more scary.
Well, I'm always a contrarian, so I would take the opposite view. I think Pakistan's leadership is much clearer. You have a civilian government that is totally ignored by the military, and the military is the ultimate deciding power. Whereas in Iran, you have sort of 50 mafia families that have taken over their each allotted sector of the economy. They've ruined the country, destroyed their economic situation, and basically they only survive because they prop up the mullahs with money. Now, what's happened recently is that one of the mullah faction of the mullahs, the extremists with Ahmadinejad, have broken the ties. They're really taking over more and more sections of the political apparatus every day. This is the brown shirt movement going on inside Iran, and that pretty soon even the old 50 mafia families, the Rafsanjani types, they're going to lose control. We have the rise of a religious dictatorship going on in Iran, but right now the country is extremely unstable. Pakistan, they have about 24-25% of the population is pro-Islamist. But I think there is a consensus now in Pakistan that, you know, they can't survive as a new home for the Taliban. And if from what I'm hearing about MI6 is going to be saying at their summit at the G20 conference next week, that Osama bin Laden is bouncing back and forth between Pakistan, Afghanistan, and Iran, you know, it's going to be very, very hard for the Pakistani government to deny that they are the new homeland for terrorism.
I agree that if you look at the public of Pakistan, that they're not nearly as fundamentalist as people make them out to be. And that is definitely a true matter to me. The only thing that I would caution, at least from where I look at things, is I'm not so sure that the military in Pakistan is as stable as we would like to think it is. I think there's a lot of infiltration going on there in terms of people over in fundamentalist areas. And I think there's a question mark in terms of just how stable the control is over that military.
Yeah, good point, Ivan. My sense is that the infiltration is in the ISI, and the army has been challenged to take over the ISI and has refused to do so. The army has refused to be to go through counterterrorism training. That the army sees themselves as sort of the neutral, dispassionate power, and that the ISI has been infiltrated, but that's not the army. Do you get that sense of?
I think there's issues both in the ISI and in the military.
Oh, okay. I had not heard a lot about Islamic fundamentalists penetrating the military. I had heard the contrary. But what's your take on that? Is the Pakistani military in at risk of being taken over by fundamentalists?
Not so much necessarily taken over, but that there's leakage, that there are people out there who are in positions. They may turn over information. They may compromise operations. And that you just can't totally expect, basically, that it's an ironclad place over there.
You know, it's funny. I hear these interesting stories that the Pakistani military recognizes the danger of an Islamic insurgency, particularly with the nuclear power. But, gee, you know, people tell me an accident took place in the Pakistani nuclear labs and that they're completely polluted with radioactivity and no one could ever set foot in them again. And that, the nuclear warheads have been separated from the missiles, and that the warheads are in an area where the other nations, perhaps the U.S., can keep an eye on them. That the risk of the Islamic nuclear jihad has been minimized. What's really at issue is, will Pakistan be Laos to Afghanistan's Vietnam?
Well, and you know, right across the table over there is Afghanistan, and I mean, look, the Americans have some very good people over in Pakistan and Afghanistan, but Afghanistan is a really a crazy place. I mean, let's just take a look at Afghanistan for a second, if you want. I mean, the Americans now they realize that they want to sit down with the Taliban and try to separate the parts they can deal with against the Al Qaeda that they don't want to deal with. Pretty much like they sat with the Sunni and Shiite tribes in Iraq that they could deal with. Now, the Taliban don't want to sit down with the Americans because nobody wants to be the one who made concessions to the president who admitted earlier this month that we were losing the war over there. The Saudis are pinch-hitting for us with the Taliban. They have good relations with them, and, of course, they don't like Al-Qaeda. But the Saudis are against the Iranians, and the Iranians don't like the Taliban. They share a border with Afghanistan and care very much about what goes on. So the Iranians are reaching out to the groups that we know as the Northern Alliance to make sure that they have a veto. Pakistan is aligned with the Taliban. That means that India will be on the other side with the Iranians. The Russians don't like the Taliban, and they're not crazy seeing the Americans sit down with them. But yet we can't do a thing in Afghanistan without Russian cooperation with supply routes. So now this is an area for quiet diplomacy amongst the fact that we've got a military sitting over there. I don't know. How do you play that one? I mean, this is another one of those areas where Obama's people are sitting there trying to figure out how to make everybody happy and figure out how to make sense out of this.
Well, what makes sense, though, when you look at Iraq, the one nation we're really not talking about, You know, even ABC did a report last week about some very positive news and some very positive polls, and in a lot of parts of the country now, things are rather normal, if you will. If Iraq becomes a decent place with a dash of democracy, some capitalism and freedom for women, isn't that going to affect the countries around it?
Well,
not really. But go ahead.
We hope that it would.
In long term, it will, I think.
Well, I think at times we're almost afraid to talk about possible good news because, to a great extent, the Middle East is a classic example of a hall of mirrors.
Well, you know, we've spent so much money on KBR and Halliburton, quite frankly, and so little on Afghanistan recovery. If we had spent 1% of the money that we had spent in Iraq on Afghanistan and built a road system and built the schools, we wouldn't be in a position now where the Taliban are coming back. You know, right now Afghanistan is a land of 1,000 villages, of which 3 or 4 are controlled by a central government.
Well, once you hear the phrase tribes used to describe a nation, you know you've got a problem right there. Because to a great extent, is Afghanistan really a country in the truest sense?
Well, I think that's one of the fallacies out there, that Afghanistan, Iraq, these are not really countries. They're countries that we created as fictions in this century, as part of whatever the colonial powers did. But the truth was that they see themselves as tribal people before they see themselves as nationals.
Right. But tribal allegiance will go to the people that offer them the best chance of long-term survival. And I think there is a sea turn going on that all across that part of Asia, we see support for the U.S. program and attacks on the Taliban, that these people recognize that the Taliban are not their friends, that life under them will be brutal, that letting the Al-Qaeda live in their neighborhoods is a tragedy. And I think the interesting thing to me is the beginnings of a non-U.S.-controlled, spontaneous native resistance. Is this authentic, or is it, you know, special forces PR?
I don't know, but just to go back to Greg's point earlier about the spreading of democracy or the hopeful signs of the future, I just thought I would point out, I went in May, I met with a 3-star general from the Air Force at a Air Force Week event in Philadelphia, and they were talking about the nation building and the various types of things that the Air Force and other branches of the government do in Iraq, Afghanistan, that a lot of people really have no idea about all the good things that they do, that are done in a quiet way and that are not sexy, but that they do. And what he wanted to say was that, you know, people should realize that an ounce of preventative medicine could prevent a lot of war. And I think it's something that the U.S. should keep in mind. We should support not necessarily nation-building efforts, but efforts to help build infrastructure in country like John is saying, and things like that. If we do those kinds of things, we might be fighting fewer wars that might be a lot less expensive.
Learn from the Marshall Plan.
We learn from Charlie Wilson's War, maybe one of the more prophetic movies made. And the last segment of the movie said that, and we screwed it up. Our guest tonight, and we will see you next Monday night on WSNRAM 620.
The Mendel Family Pesach Time Tours and the Pearls invite you to get Hamish with the Amish with their unique Pesach program at the Lancaster Host Hotel, just 2.5 hours from New York. The entire hotel, which recently underwent a $10 million renovation, is entirely kosher for Pesach under strict rabbinical supervision, non-gebras, chassidish, hashchita, chalav yisrael, hand shmurah matzahs. All baking is done on premises with 3 sumptuous gourmet glatt kosher meals served daily. Of course, there's a lavish 24-hour-day tea room, private sedarim, full day camp led by Shlomo Hyman of Teaneck, New Jersey, infant daycare and babysitting, separate swimming, 18-hole golf course, tennis, full exercise room, and much more. Aside from enjoying local attractions and entertainment, including Amish Country and Bug Your Eyes, Hershey Park, Sesame Park, and much more, deeply entertained by Kuppi Elbogen and Shlomi Gertner, as well as hear stimulating lectures by Rabbi Tzvi Weiss and Rabbi Daniel Mechanic. So call 1-866-PESACH-09. That's 1-866-PESACH-09. Partial stays are also available if you just want to come up for the day or a couple of days. Call 1-866-PESACH-09 and get Hamish with the Amish. 1-866-PESACH-09. Rates start at just $16.99 per person. Lowest advertised price this year. Call now. 1-866-PESACH-09.
Now playing at the Westchester Broadway Theater in Elmsford is their first hit show of 2009, Meshuggah Nuns, the ecumenical nonsense. Those lovable little sisters of Hoboken have been given an all-expense-paid trip on the Fates of All Nations cruise. When the cruise cast for Fiddler on the Roof becomes seasick, our very funny nuns take over the show with Tevye, and we have an hysterical Meshuggah Nuns. This is a musical for anyone who loves a good laugh. Your evening begins with a delicious served dinner, including salad, dessert, and coffee. It's Broadway entertainment with the best dinner and show package anywhere, including free parking. And all this for only $73. Order tickets online at BroadwayTheater.com or call 914-592-2222. That's 914-592-2222 for Meshuggah Nuns, now playing at the Westchester Broadway Theater in Elmsford.
Professional builders and remodelers choose Anderson Windows more than any other brand. And the Woodright double-hung window is one reason why. With rich wood interiors in oak, pine, and maple, low-maintenance exteriors, and authentic traditional styling, the Anderson Woodright window can make new homes look old and old homes like new.
Stop into Greater Windows and Doors at 1302 60th Street in Brooklyn. You can call them at 718-972-2626. Dear Edwina, the musical comedy from the creators of Junie B. Jones, the musical, is a hit. Join Edwina and her pals as they put on their hilarious advice-giving show the New York Times is calling a tour de force, gleaming with originality. Dear Edwina is now playing at DR2 Theater, 103 East 15th Street in the heart of Union Square. Log on to DearEdwina.com or call Telecharge.com at 212-239-6200. That's DearEdwina.com or call Telecharge.com at 212-239-6200. Call for your tickets to Dear Edwina now. It's the hit show you don't want to miss.
Are you interested in selling radio?
Opinions and views expressed therein do not necessarily reflect those of AM 620 WSNR or its management.
This is AM 620 WSNR, Jersey City.